Nyalak Hadich, Wajik Noongar Morit, Kayang Kadak Nija Wajik Buja. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to country, sky and waterways. We pay our respect to their elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples listening today. Welcome to Noongar Wellbeing. I'm your host, Brooke Collard. I'm a Ballardong Wajik Noongar woman, and in this season of Noongar Wellbeing, I'll be speaking to the next generation of leaders, young people of the Noongar community, about a Noongar perspective on self and community care.
Jack is a proud citizen of the Noongar Nation with cultural ties that span from the pristine beaches along the coast of Whadjuk country through the wetlands of Borloo over Kartamunda, Black Hills, to the granite outcrops of Ballardong Buja, which is home to the Munjat tree. He completed a Bachelor of Arts majoring in Political Science and International Relations at UWA and is currently a full-time performer. Jack sings, dances, acts and writes poetry in response to the Buja he is sustained by and all of those that sustain her. He's a board director for the Community Arts Network and the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander International Engagement Organisation.
Do you want to just quickly tell me what you had for breakfast today?
What I had for breakfast? I had leftovers. I made chili con carne and I put them in some toast. It's pretty lovely.
Oh, yum.
I had it in my coffee to wash it down, and it was just the perfect match because it was like real spicy. Like I made it way too spicy.
Oh, no.
But the coffee just washed it down real lovely. But I might be running out this room any...
Yeah. What's it? It's not bokkajine.
Yeah. Well, what is it? Yeah. Not bokkaji. Bokkaji is battle. What is it? Something like that.
Yeah, like bokkajin. Bokkajin.
Boyaka.
Boyaka.
Boyaka. That's evacuate.
Yeah. Get out of here. I've got to go Gunamaya.
Yeah. So that might be a segment.
Thanks so much for joining me. Yeah. So I wanted to bring you on to Noongar Wellbeing because I'm really admiring like all the amazing stuff you're doing, especially going like international with the work that you're doing. Do you mind telling us a little bit about yourself?
I was born here, raised here. I spent a little bit of time down in Busselton as a young fella and came back up here, gone through the schooling system here, went to university here on the river at University of Western Australia. So I've been through many different chapters of my life. This chapter right now is my favorite chapter yet. It's the chapter of, you know, after 6 years at university, first time hearing about decolonization and learning, you know, what does that word mean? What does colonization even mean? You know, they don't teach that at school. And, I was very lucky. I came from high school and then in my first week of uni, I went to a public lecture where Professor Megan Davis was yarning there. And my dad dragged me along and I went along and he said, you know, introduce yourself. I was like, nah, shame. And he said, nah, go on. So I did. And I said, look, I'm studying international relations. And she said, do you want to come to Geneva with me? I was like, what? She said, yeah, intern for me. And I, you know, didn't know too much about the United Nations, let alone why Professor Megan Davis was there. So I was in for a shock and I learned a lot as a 19-year-old in that space. With all these mob from every continent around the world who were there because those United Nations spaces are their last hope. You know, they're far from perfect, these systems, but they are the last hope for Indigenous mob. And we fought for these spaces because we got these unique rights. And that's something that I learned that first time I went there, and it's something I've been learning ever since. You know, why is it that we have these rights? Who, what does it actually mean to be Indigenous? Because when it comes to living in Perth City, you know, the story that we're told is a different story than what our old people told our children. And that's what culture is about. It's the stories that we tell ourselves. When we look in the mirror, it's the story we tell ourselves about who we are and where we fit and where that purpose is. And so my journey has been a journey of me trying to connect deeper because that's what I learned, you know. All these mob around the world, the reason why we're getting assassinated, the reason why we're getting pushed out of our countries, the reason is because we care for our country. And the dominant powers of the day, they want that country, you know, that's profit. And as long as we exist and neoliberalism and capitalism are the dominant ideologies of the day, there's going to be this problem. And we're seeing that in Palestine right now. We're seeing that in the Congo right now. We're seeing that all over the world right now. And it's a story as old as time. And the way in which it's being told by Western media right now is a story as old as time as well, because they love to hide things under the rug. They like to avoid the guilt. They like to avoid the shame. And so that's what our culture is about. It's about understanding that as humans, we can be flawed. Understanding that we as humans have lost our way before. And those times that we lost our way, those that didn't lose the way, those are the ones that survived, and they live to tell those stories that we still have. But there have been times that people have lost their way with the Buddha, when they lost their way with their Mort, and they stopped following those old paths, and they started forging new paths, shortcuts. And those shortcuts work for a little bit, but then in the long run, everything comes out in that wash. And so learning about what it meant to be Nyunga allowed me, from that slow process of being challenged about what I had been put on me, the stories of this dominant culture that intrinsically attached shame and guilt to this primitive culture of the past. And when I was in these spaces of Indigenous people from around the world, I learned that we have the only answers to all of the world's problems. We live and breathe it. And that's why we're getting wiped out, because the things that make us well are the things that don't go well with consumerism. They don't go well with the matrix and the way in which we're forced to produce and consume and produce and consume because of these assumptions of scarcity. And so that's something that I took a while to understand. And that's the thing about culture. The more that you learn, the more that you realize you don't know much at all, but you get more and more appreciative as you get those pieces of the puzzle. And one thing that I was taught on Facebook, when my Jukan Kylie Bracknell, her post about our language and saying, we've got no word for thank you. And at the time, I didn't really understand it to the degree that I do now. We don't have a word for thank you. We don't have a word for please. We don't have a word for sorry. Why? It's because we never had to beg for anything. And so these assumptions of scarcity, that's a whole different assumption of a whole different paradigm. Our paradigm was one of abundance, where there was always enough food. There was always enough water. And above all, there was always enough love and respect. We live in a world now where there's a scarcity of all of those things. And people are living in survival mode, trying to survive in that scarcity. And it's deeply entrenched in our minds. And so to try and unlearn all of that is a lot. But I'm grateful for my journey and how far I've come along that journey, and to have the affirmations along that journey from those people that watch you and say, yep, you're doing the right thing, you're on your way, and giving you little clues along the way as well about who we are, because that's what our culture is about. Everyone's born divinely who they are. Every animal, every bird has their strengths and have their weaknesses too. And we love them unconditionally regardless. But from that knowing better, we can do better. And so my journey of being a 18-year-old, going to these Nyungar men's camps and Uncle Richard Wally talking about the Barunka system and saying, you know, everybody's born with a totem. You just have to find it. And so that was inspiring. I remember me and my Nguyen Elisha Jacobs, we were talking for months afterwards, say, hey, you found your Barunka, you found your, and you know, Nguyen, he was working as a ranger at the time. I'd moved over to Indonesia, and that was an opportunity for me to see what paradigms are possible outside of Perth, which is a comfort bubble. You know, I went to a private school with some private schoolboys, and those assumptions of how the world could and should be, they were challenged in Indonesia, a place that is, you know, quote unquote, underdeveloped. Yet, you know, some of these reports say, you know, they got the lowest stress in the world. And I saw that, and that's because they got masyarakat, they got community, you know, where they check up on one another, they care, and there's that interdependency within that interconnection. And I saw how culture can live and breathe despite colonization, because they had the Dutch there, we got the British here, anything is possible. And so by seeing these mob from all around the world at all the stages of colonization that they've been through and their stages of reclaiming their culture, revitalizing their culture, realizing their dreams of self-determination away from these paternalistic structures. And then you see the ones that have, you see the ones that have taken the time to go and to learn their culture and to practice that and get that down pat, because it takes a lot of effort. That's what was so perfect about that culture. You can spend your whole lifetime getting better and better at carving from tapping sticks, and then you move up to your boomerangs, and then you move up from there to your spear, and then you move up to your shield. That's for men, you know, it's a never-ending process, and then you have that knowledge to share for that next generation. It's to succeed simply. This world that we live in, we're insatiably chasing our tail. To be able to share that knowledge and to be valued, to be respected, to be needed in that simple way, that's powerful. And that's what I learned when I did Song Circle last year with my Jukan Kylie and my Ngudya, Marikich, Clint, and all them fellas there. And we learned how to make rope traditional way. and my friend Ruben, he's really good at it. And I just kept coming up to him before the performance saying, hey, can you help me with this? Can you help me with this? Because he was just real muddich at it. And it's those small things that, you know, we're missing in this day-to-day life where we just see ourselves as failures because that outcome, that success, the criteria isn't ours. The criteria is insatiable and, you know, you never actually get what you want to get.
I have so many questions now because I grew up, went to high school in Margaret River. So being like real fair myself, and it's always that thing of, yeah, like just there's no real cultural safety in school, especially when you're somewhere regional. It's like a bit tougher too. And it's still happening now. Like I was talking to someone at my auntie's house and she's like 16, same thing is still happening. So, you know, there needs to be change made there. Like that's a big thing. And, you know, like going from, I'd say Busselton's regional personally, and going from those spaces of the academic space in schooling is different. And then private schooling in itself is completely different. And especially coming in as like a strong person yourself, you know, it's different. Like you said, you're in a bit of a bubble and then, you know, breaking out into that internship, going international and just like widening your worldview even more. There's like so much going on there and just seeing like other cultures that are community led. You got to watch this documentary later on Netflix. It's like the Blue Zones. Have you seen about those? Yeah, you'll have to check it out because you made me think of that immediately as soon as you were talking about in Indonesia, them being some of the like happiest people in the world because of the community. And that was something about the Blue Zones. There's like multiple areas around the world where people constantly reach 100 years old really easily and they were looking into that
why. I think I've seen that, like the old people in Italy walking around steep places and that.
Yeah.
It's fascinating, eh? Real simple stuff.
Yeah, so simple. Like literally like the elements to living to a century is literally like community, gardening, like walking really easily and just eating like legumes, things like that variety in diet. So much of that was so dependent on that community because there were old cultures that looked after their old people and mm-hmm. just like made sure everyone was provided for, which is something we're definitely like missing a lot now. And just talking about string making too, you know, like I did that a while ago with one of Pop Kruda as well. And it's funny because like it's like braiding hair. Like that's so I picked it up quick because it's like braiding my hair. And then same thing, like I was having to show some of the other blokes around how to do it because I was like, oh, I was just like doing hair and I just go like that. So, yeah. I guess like for yourself, because you're in those spaces and like you're connecting with those other cultures of people, especially in, it seems like quite a daunting space like that in the UN because you were saying earlier how you had to have an interpreter. So you use language a lot in your work. How did you find that worked in an international space, speaking somewhere like a UN conference?
Yeah, well, they say it's the belly of the beast, you know, and it really is. And we just make do with what we got because we really fought to get those spaces and they don't make it easy for us to stay in those spaces. So we do have to make do with what we got. We do have to work within those four languages, even though we come from thousands of different languages, you know, from all these different continents, all these different countries. We have to make do with the languages that the UN provides translation for to try and fight within that system. But it is, you know, their system. It's their way of doing things. The power is all in their hands and it's very problematic. And it's something where I've gone from seeing United Nations as, you know, in the movies, you know, they're like saving the world.
Yeah.
to seeing, you know, really deep down how corrupt and how broken it is. But still we have this obligation to keep fighting in these spaces because it's not just about us, you know. It's these decisions in the United Nations, especially when it comes to the climate. You know, if we're not in the room, they're talking about our lands, you know, and if we're not in the room, they don't really want to do too much. So we try our very best and it's very inspiring to see all the mob from all around the world and how they do that succession planning, you know, similar to, you know, Professor Megan and how she brought me along. She brought a couple other followers along to her tenure there as an expert on the mechanisms on the rights of Indigenous peoples and seeing those other mob, how they bring their young people through so they get that perspective. And it's that perspective that changes everything, seeing the connection between those struggles, but then also seeing how attainable those successes are. It's as simple as, you know, just looking at our food and growing our food and then just living how old people lived. You know, these assumptions, especially as Nyungars, it's all survival. So shifting that paradigm is a tricky thing. And all these issues that we see, there's just band-aid solutions, symptoms of a larger problem, you know, of this world that we live in and how much it doesn't meet our needs and how lost and displaced we feel without that purpose, without that place.
We do have this real strong connection to country that, you know, if other people just like hone into that, like they can feel that same way too. It's just about that reciprocal nature of what we've always done. And it's about, I think New Zealand recently did something where they made whales have the same rights as humans. So like you, like same legal rights, you can't do anything to them. And like, that's just how things have been viewed for millennia. And I feel like Western society is only just like catching up to that again now. And I just think about, you know, I'll walk somewhere and you start to feel like you're struggling to breathe and you're like, oh, like what's going on? And it's because you're picking up on pollution in a lake right next to you or something like that. So it's just about, yeah, getting connected to that stuff again for sure. And just inviting other people into that to be aware to say like, you know, like it's there. You've just got to be aware of it and give that respect.
Absolutely. And it's a different, you know, Buddha, it's a different world that we're connecting to. And it's not easy, you know, it is a lot. And there's a reason why people disconnect, you know, Wajulas and Nyungars. There's a reason why that disconnected way of existence is a preferred route, because there's a lot to connect to. You know, we're living in the city where it's just concrete, you know, suffocating these trees and these wetlands that were once there. You know, there's no wetlands. These big black cockatoos have got nowhere to nest. These lakes are drying up. It's a lot to connect to. You know, what's going on in Gaza, it's a lot to connect to. But it's up to us to connect. And that's what I learned. Like, that's what it means to be Indigenous, is to connect. Because within that connection is that obligation, and there's levels to that obligation. And we knew that the more connection we have, the more obligated we are, the better off we'll be for generations and generations and generations. And it's just a step-by-step process. And, you know, it's cool to look back on 6 years of, you know, real intentional connection, spending that time at University of Western Australia at Crawley, their beautiful location, and spending time talking to the river and slowly, you know, building up my vocabulary, building up that capacity to speak that old language. And then, you know, in the space of those years, getting to a stage where I'm really proud of, you know, what I'm speaking, and I'm so excited to see how much it can grow as well. You know, it's exciting stuff with Clint Bracknell and, you know, Kylie Bracknell with their Hecate script that they just come out with, really taking Nyungar Wang and Nyungar Da to that next level. And that's where the magic is, you know. We're very lucky to be a part of this culture, the oldest living continuous culture in the world, the oldest language in the world. There's a lot of power in that. And once we step into that power, that's when them dynamics change.
Yeah, they did that for my birthday, just so you know, because it's coming out over there. Yeah, but I know what you mean. I went to see Hecate a few years ago, and that was just like a crazy experience just to see language used in that way so like fluently and just so powerfully. You feel it in your, we're in your spirit, you know, straight away where you're like, oh, like I want to be involved with this. I want to do this. Like that's what I could have and connect to. And to think back to then when I only knew bits and pieces and like I wouldn't say I'm a fluent speaker at all, but at least I can sit in now and I can understand most of a conversation of someone now. Like I probably wouldn't be able to jump in that much. Like, you know, the more you go down that path, you think you're just kind of doing your own thing. And that tends to be a thing sometimes with Noongar mob as well. And just I think, you know, non-white cultures is, and especially Australian culture, is the tall poppy things. So sometimes you just kind of keep to your own bubble because you're not trying to, you know, make a big broadcast of yourself and what you're doing. But others are noticing, and like you were saying with the clues and that, but you get people asking you like, oh, do you know what this word means? And you're like, oh, I didn't realize I had this reputation of knowing these things, but it's getting around.
No, absolutely. And that's what Jukin Kylie talks about. She says on the other side of luck is responsibility. And we're so lucky. You know, you think about, you know, our parents and their parents and their parents and the fear connected with that language. They couldn't turn that fear off, you know. That was always there their whole lifetimes, and we're the only ones unlearning that, you know, taking that button out of that whole system so that we talk that language and we feel that pride, we feel that love, and it's powerful. It's exciting to think about, you know.
I'm obsessed with diving into like psychology analysis things, especially like, you know, the whole like gentle parenting thing. It's so based in Indigenous parenting methods. Like there was this really big article years ago about like Inuit parenting where they didn't blow up or have like tantrums or outrage because they're like, that's the only thing a child would do because they can't control their emotions. And you think about it like that and you're like, oh, wow, yeah, like I need to think about what I'm modeling for my child to kind of say like, okay, I need to stop, take a deep breath. Because, like, you know, just your breath being linked to calming everything down and just, oh, I could go into that too deeply.
No, absolutely. And I think that's the selflessness being embodied within culture. You know, it's putting other people in front of yourself because as humans we react, but we also have control over how we react as well, and we choose how much we blow up or don't blow up, and it's a practice. It's a constant practice, and that goes back to the language. I was thinking about a quote. I was listening to Len Collard put together a bunch of men, and he put some interviews, and they're online at the moment. And one of them was Pop Seelengarlet, rest in peace. And he said, you know, you can go wherever you want. You just need to point yourself in that direction and you'll get there. And it's the same with language. The more you chip away at it, the more you chip away at it, you're going to have all those words. You're going to have all of that, you know. When it comes to practicing meditation, being calm, you know, observing but not absorbing, practice, practice, practice makes perfect. And that's the thing about our culture. There's a bunch of practices, but there's no good unless you're practicing them, you know. Like with these tapping sticks, I chopped that wood 3 months ago and it's just sitting in my house and they're unfinished because I just feel lazy, because it requires a lot of patience, requires a lot of respect. It took me 4 sets of tapping sticks before I even had my first ones finished, because I leave them outside overnight and then they get cold and then they shrink and then they expand overnight and then they crack. So there was a lot of frustration for years until I eventually got one. Because this phone here, it's practicing instant gratification. It's practicing the opposite of what these practices are. And it's the same, you know, when it came to making that rope, me and Mangun had to work together. As men, we work together to do that. And we get in sync and intuitive, we get linked up and we know how much we need to pull. Because if you let it go, you got to start again. And that rope winyan. And so these are the memories attached to that fella now. And that's how we slow down our world around us. All of these answers, you know, I started at university studying neoliberalism and international relations, and they just said, first semester, the world's, you know, it is what it is. And there's nothing you can do about it. You know, the rich are getting richer. There's this race to the bottom where, you know, these big multinational corporations put the lowest bid on for these Indian fellas or these Indonesian fellas, or and say, well, who's got the lowest fee? And they'll just fight for the scraps and they'll just race to the bottom. So how do you solve that? Well, if you're fed and you're housed and you got, you know, security in that way, then these carrots and these sticks don't matter anymore. And so that's what I learned in these international spaces. What does self-determination actually mean? What does it look like? Is it even possible? And I yarned to one Haudenosaunee elder. I forgot his name, Yon, but he was saying how sovereignty, you know, isn't easy. They got their own passports. And every time they go to the airport, they take their passports and the security take their extra time and they say, you know, that's admiration time. He said sometimes they've missed their flights and they've had all these, you know, big hoo-has and whatever. It's hard, but it's worth it in the long run. And I think that's the analogy for us Nyungars, because we are very lucky to be the beneficiaries of what the good that neoliberalism can bring. But we become too individualistic as a result. Because it was only one generation back, you know, oldies would spend the weekend going from house to house, hanging out with the family, spending time together, you know. And in the space of one generation, I see that really changing, especially our generation as young people growing up in this world. As you talked about, we're in our own bubbles. Could be tall poppy syndrome. It could be a whole lot of different reasons. It's because we get the option and we choose it at the end of the day. And that's where we have to feel the shame, feel the guilt of realizing that we are deeply colonized and we need to unlearn that. But the biggest impediment is that unconditional love that hasn't been modeled, you know, because we've been indoctrinated into this shame, into this guilt, into this competitive mindset, because there's supposedly this scarcity, but there isn't. There's more than enough love, but that love has to come from within. And along that journey, that journey of learning to hate yourself and then coming out and learning to love yourself unconditionally for all those things that you, you know, once hated yourself for, That's very liberating. And that's what that totemic system is about. That's about us from a young age saying, this is you. You are perfectly you. You'll always be perfectly you. You just need to keep doing you. And then it's, you're just competing against yourself. How can I pay my deepest respect to that owl? You know, how can I become that? How can I hone that in the best ways so that I can model that for the next follower that got that? The initiation by other means, you know, I've had those experiences as well. You know, you hear about how initiation did happen before all of that disruption, and then looking back on your life, you know, that's the most powerful thing. When I first started looking for my totem, 4 years, I never found nothing, you know, and I was like, maybe I am too colonized. Maybe there are too many impressions in this world that have disconnected me from that. But then when I found it and it all made sense, then I realized that no, that's never gone away. That's the illusion they want us to believe, because that's power. You know, when we step into that power, how much power they got? They off their country. They're lost. Our power is knowing who we are, knowing where our ancestors walked, knowing why they walked there. And that's where that luck comes in. And they're saying that this is a time that we're ready to step up. It's been a time of us being silent. It's been a time of us hiding what we got. Now's the time to show our hand and to lead from that good place, you know? And that's what the world is looking for. They just want people that know where they're going.
And especially for yourself, because like going in those kinds of spaces are really daunting. Like anxiety goes real high. You feel your body like get full of adrenaline, or maybe I'm speaking for myself, you know, but like sometimes you do feel like you're putting yourself on the line with like some of the information you share, or when you do speak up, because you know, you get worried because you're like, I'm here representing my mob, and there's a certain responsibility behind that for sure. Is there anything that you do for yourself when you do have to speak in those kinds of platforms that help ground yourself, or to like just make sure it works out all good for you so you're not too stressed out?
Yeah, well, that's the thing about them paths that they walked. They walked paths different to anyone else, and those paths allowed them to live in that balance, allowed them to walk those paths in harmony with the different energies of the different paths. And so all the answers lie in that way they used to live. And that language, what they spoke, very, very powerful. So before, any time I speak, and when I speak in that language, I just get to that connection, you know? And it's as simple as that. But then the other times, like today, I'll go for a walk, and I'll go to the Wano, you know, I'll go to the Tuart, and I'll get those smells that they used to smell, their favorite smells, their favorite combination of smells. And I'll say, hey, you smell that? Come down, help me out, because I'm just a speck of dust, you know? But with you fellas, Kaningwa, with all of you fellas, with that dust flicking up, you know, that's a big sandstorm, and that's powerful. And that's the thing about that power, you know, it's the perspective, understanding that more than 5,000 generations of our old people were in this land right here. And when we call them out in that language, when we put them smells on for show and they get that fire going, and they can see us, they come. The more you call, the more they come.
Every step you take, like everything is energy, and you know, nothing really disappears. You think of it from like a physics perspective, they say like energy actually never disappears. It just changes form, changes shape. And that's exactly, you know, that knowledge from the old people that you're tapping into there when you're calling out to everyone is just returning, because it never dies out. I read too much. Been reading Memory Code by Lynette Kelly a lot.
Okay, what's that about?
I'll give it a go. I think you'll like it. She references Mob with her song lines a lot, because she's saying we perfected the art of memory more than any other culture in the entire world, because of how I guess the Western way of viewing it is like a memory palace, because that's what our song lines are, especially when we attach them to those paths. And what's going on there is that passing on of knowledge in a way that, you know, we worked out how the human brain works perfectly to retain information. And, you know, that's what that all is. And you're connecting out to that when you're talking to Kylie and Clint Bracknell, and then also with like Richard Wally as well.
Yeah, and this is stuff that we've been doing for a long time. You know, we got storage devices where we use quartz on our phones, but, you know, we got quartz that we use for these purposes because we understood these properties, but we also understood when enough is enough. When too much is too much, and which practices, you know, lead you down that wrong path. And so it's so awesome to be in Noongar at this time. You know, for generations, they've been looking down on us. And now they really got to look to us. And so now it's just a stage of us accepting what you've been offered, you know. You've been offered in your path and those clues that you've been given. Now it's a stage of embracing that, this world, we keep the same clothes, we stay in the same places, we're around the same people. It's easy to take steps back, and that journey is just all more and more and more and more. As we have these conversations now, and as we connect more and more as a community in that good way, from that good place, not from those places of competition, as we model that unconditional love, that's when those initiation practices as a community, we can bring those back, because it's simple things. It's those pats on the back. It's those hugs. It's those, you know, it's those compliments and that praise where we see that we are a Mort. You know, even if that native title wants to divide us, even if that voice wants to divide us, these Wadjalas will do everything they can to divide us. But when we won, we got that power.
I know for myself, coming out of the referendum from last year, I have my own opinions. Like, I definitely felt a lot of rage coming out of it, because we were thinking about the campaign with it. It did look quite positive. Like, you know, in the beginning there, initially I was like unsure of what it was. I had to do my own research first to make sure it was something to actually get behind. And it was especially towards the end there, it seemed like a positive change. And then for us to get the no vote out of it. How did you personally feel with that outcome last year?
Yeah, well, I mean, in that decolonization process, I've learned to accept, you know, the Wadjalas that I've grown up with, those that I've absorbed parts of as well, and understanding why they are so racist. And that's the biggest thing. Once you accept that, understand why they are racist, and understand they're probably not going to change too much from being racist, because these assumptions of what they want and what they need and what we want and what we need, they don't go together. And so I feel like for me personally, I was already prepared for that no. There was a little bit of pressure. We had a little bit of power, but now what? So I wasn't surprised. I feel like us as Noongars, people of this land, we need to come to terms with the status quo of this racist colony and call it for what it is. And then once we can step in that truth, that's power, and a power again, because we're not in this abusive relationship where we get breadcrumbs, you know, where we get love bomb here and there, you know, for NAIDOC week, and we say, oh, we love you so much. Oh, that was a awesome day. Oh, we love you, dearie. Oh, you know. And then what, for the rest of the year, deep down, you know, they just prefer if you weren't around, because they don't want to be reminded of the guilt. They don't want to be reminded of the shame, and they don't want to remove it from their bloodline, because they don't want to look at it. So they'll just keep passing it on. That's how bloodlining works. That's why our kinship structures are so perfect and so intricate. That's why we are the way we are, because we understood that. And if you hold on to that stuff, it comes out in all the other ways. And so that's where self-determination comes in. And if we mobilize and focus on what we actually need to do, we
Noongar rising.
That's it. That's Noongar rising, Noongarabin. You know, how do we Noongarize the world around us? Nyiriangabin, you know, not making it more like them termites. You know, that's what old Popol would say, you know, termites, they just take and take and take and take, and they won't take, they keep taking until there's nothing left. So it's a whole different paradigm that we need to cultivate. And it's awesome to see the deadly artists, you know, the deadly up and coming leaders that we got following those trails of those leaders before us that held that space, you know, when that space was really hard to hold, and they held on to what they held on to, despite everyone trying to take that away.
And just speaking about those people you're surrounding yourself with too, like Ilona yesterday was talking about, she channeled that rage into love, into the community. And so, like, again, speaking from an artist perspective, it is talking about who you're surrounding yourself with. And that's like a professional thing too, where for myself, straight after, I was like, I'm not working with anyone for the crumbs anymore. Like, I need to work out these other ways on. Well, my boss, Ben, I work at a gaming company now called Awesome Black.
In Woodridge.
Yeah, so we're writing a video game, and it's literally very fueled by what happened last year. And what he always says is, we want the whole cookie. We don't just want the crumbs. And that's exactly it. It's like taking that agency back, you know, and showing like that power that we do all have. But we've all had all these different kinds of systems, like different economic systems, different law systems. Even around the time it happened in October, I think of something that Noel Nanup said one time about how with the six seasons we have, usually around October is around like a birthing time. And he said, you've got to think about that with like new projects you're starting up too, because you got to think about what you're putting your energy into for the rest of the year. So to me anyway, like those correlations happen all the time, and people don't realize that they're subconsciously doing these things that align with how our seasons are and that. So, yeah, just thinking about where you're putting energy again for the rest of the year after that outcome.
That's why, you know, all these things happen for reasons, and that's why we have to listen. That's why old people say Dabrakan Kri, you know, when they wrap up their welcomes, when they wrap up Wangwani. Because when you go slowly, you can go with intent. You know, when you go slowly, you can reflect on where you're stepping and where you're not stepping. When you go slowly, you can enjoy that ride. And when those messages come, whether it's a dream, whether it's a new animal in an environment, the next time you walk there, a different call you hear in the morning, a text from a random person, or just the thought of texting a random person, if you're aware of it and slow down enough, you can listen to it. And I feel like that referendum was telling us, get off that, break them shackles of paternalism. Because those assumptions that we're living with, those assumptions that they're eventually going to help us out, they're not helping us out. That's what's holding us back. We have been the ones that have been able to survive and different to those mob to the east and to the north. And we need to check our privilege and to check those impressions that have been put into us.
Are there any thoughts you'd want to leave young people on, like, what they can do for themselves for well-being, especially in a time that we are in now?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. You know, again, Duke and Kylie, full of wicked bits of wisdom and good quotes. Talks about Bridia, you know, what's Bridi? What's the Bridi? It's the path. What's the Bridi? It's the one that knows the path. And if you're not the Bridia and you actually don't know the path, you're probably going to lead people off a cliff, or, you know, you're going to starve them. So there's a lot of paths in this place right now, carved by many people that come from many places with many different paths. Our old people walked a certain path, and that path allowed them to live in balance, allowed them to live in harmony with the world around them and live and thrive so much so that they never had to say please, they never had to say sorry, they never had to say thank you. And all we have to do is start by throwing that sand in the water, start speaking your language, start learning how to work with the wood, start spending time on the country, allow that country to take all the negativity of this world away. Because I'm very idealistic and I'm like, yeah, we'll just be boss. We can just go out bush and just live off the land and, you know, that's it. But we're born into this time for a reason. And my message to the next generation is acknowledging how divine you are as an individual. Within that divinity, you know, everyone's got their strengths. Everyone's got their weaknesses. Own that. You can't change what you can't change. That's our old system is you play to your strengths. You don't try and be the best swimmer if you're an owl, you know. You do what you do. You stay to your strengths and then that's you're right. Because there's 360 degrees in a circle. We were just one little degree. And that's why them ceremonies are so important. And this time right now, the internet, there's ceremonies in themselves as we connect with our brothers and sisters in Gaza, you know, when we connect with our brothers and sisters across the globe. As we share that space and time and that energy together, there's a lot of luck with that perspective. And now my message to that generation is to run with that. You know, we got all that we got. Now run with it. And get to that destination as quick as we can.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Noongar Wellbeing with me, Brooke Collard, and my guest, Jack Collard. You can find more episodes at sbs.com.au/Noongar Wellbeing or follow the series in podcast apps like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and the SBS Radio app. Order one.